This is KMUN. Incumbents faltered in key elections in Pacific County, Washington, Tuesday night. Preliminary unofficial election results show 24-year-old challenger Eddie Hillard with more than 70% of the vote in Ilwaco's mayoral race. Hillard is the owner and operator of Drop Anchor Seafood and Grill in Long Beach.
This campaign, it was never about the politics. It was about bringing people together and building a future where everybody's voice is heard and valued.
He faced incumbent Mike Casinelli. The 82-year-old mayor was seeking a fourth term. Casinelli is a retired electrician and owns the Coho Sally charter boat that operates out of the port of Ilwaco. Casinelli told KMUN he felt his age was against him in the race for mayor. But he said the voters had spoken. He said Hillard has a good reputation and he wished him luck. If the election results hold, Hillard says he plans to meet with city staff in the coming weeks to make sure he's able to hit the ground running when he takes office in January. He says one of his priorities after he takes office is to look at ways that citizens can become more involved and to boost attendance at city council meetings.
We've got our comprehensive plan update, which is due June of 2027, and that is a huge piece as we're looking towards the future, which is kind of a lot of my platform. We are expected to see some awesome growth, and I want to make sure that we're going about that in the most effective way possible that includes everybody.
In the race for the Port of Ilwaco District 3 commissioner seat, a former manager of the port seems poised for a win. Guy Glenn Jr. had just over 70% of the vote Tuesday night. Incumbent Butch Smith trailed with less than 30% of the vote. Glenn served as the port's manager for 8 years before resigning in 2021. He's worked as the executive finance manager for the Port of Columbia County since 2023.
I'm very honored by the turnout and the election results. So, you know, I'm just ready to move forward as soon as everything's finalized.
During their campaigns, both Glenn and Smith pointed to their experience working with and around the Port of Ilwaco. Glenn said one of his top priorities, if elected, is the financial condition of the port. He said the port is currently on a path that is not sustainable. He told KMUN his previous experience with the Port of Ilwaco, as well as his current job, gives him a lot of insight now as he expects to take on the role of commissioner.
I know the people that are impacted by the port and, you know, the enjoyment and the sense of community that the port brings to the peninsula and to the region is really important and, you know, dear to my heart and my family and friends and just the community in general. So,
Smith had served as a port commissioner for more than a decade. But on Tuesday, he told KMUN it was clear the voters had made their decision.
Disappointing, but, you know, I love the Port of Ilwaco. It's where I live and where my family's done business for over five generations, 60 plus years. And so I want the port to be successful.
Smith also previously served as an Ilwaco City Councilor, but says he has no plans to pursue elected office now and expects his involvement with the port will be minimal beyond the interactions usual with running his charter business there.
Well, I always feel, you know, if, you know, on something like this, it's, you know, the duty of the person who didn't win the race to get out of the way and because the voters have spoke. So I don't intend to do anything but go back to be a private citizen and wish others well and just become a private citizen again.
Up north at the troubled Port of Peninsula, John Oakes is well ahead of incumbent Bill Darien for a position on that commission. An audit by the state revealed financial mismanagement at the Port of Peninsula last year and also revealed late payment of employee benefits, expired lease agreements, late financial reporting, and numerous violations of the state's Open Public Meetings Act. Oakes, a commercial fisherman, said he was running because he was concerned about the lack of transparency and oversight of the current Port Commission, as well as what he believes is a lack of an overall strategic plan within the port. Darian, the co-owner of Mermaid Inn and RV Park in Long Beach, has served on the Port of Peninsula Commission since 2018. In Pacific County, an estimated 1,710 ballots still remain to be counted. The next ballot count is scheduled for Friday. In Wakayakum County, John Mason holds a significant majority of the vote over challenger John Grasseth in the race for Wakayakum County Sheriff. According to preliminary results, Mason has more than 88% of the vote. Mason had a significant lead in the primary election earlier this year and was expected to hold that lead in this election. In the town of Kathlamet, Nicholas Siebold is ahead of current town councilor Laurel Waller in the race for mayor with more than 65% of the vote. Tyson Clark seems poised to hold onto his position 4 seat on the Kathlamet Town Council. He remains well ahead of challenger Julia McCoy. Elections officials in Wakayakum County estimate there are around 400 ballots left to count. The next ballot count is scheduled for Friday. You're listening to KMUN. State attorneys from the West Coast and 13 other states say a federal proposal to stop tracking greenhouse gas pollution is illegal. KUOW's John Ryan reports.
Major polluters nationwide have to tally and disclose how much damage they do to the climate each year. Trump officials say that requirement is burdensome, costing businesses $300 million a year. And they say it does nothing to help human health or air quality. The Trump administration is denying decades of scientific evidence that climate change endangers human health and ecosystems worldwide. The state attorneys say that failing to keep tabs on the most urgent environmental problem of our time will not make it go away. The proposal is part of a larger push by the White House to remove regulations on fossil fuels in order to, quote, unleash American energy. If the administration does turn a blind eye to planet heating pollution as proposed, the state attorneys say they plan to fight it in court. I'm John Ryan reporting.
Can Washington State support data centers and protect the environment, ratepayers, and green energy development? That's what a state workgroup is trying to figure out. Spokane Public Radio's Eliza Billingham reports.
Grant County has dozens of data centers. 20 years ago, the county's top 10 taxpayers used to pay around $4 million a year in taxes. Now, they're paying over $54 million a year. That revenue has funded local infrastructure improvements, plus new sports and entertainment venues. But a new state workgroup found that Washington is falling behind on creating the technology it needs to support data centers and achieve the state's clean energy goals.
The increased demand for energy from data centers could impact the Climate Commitment Act allowances under the Cap and Invest program.
That's Diane Buderak from the Department of Ecology at the Data Center Workgroup meeting this week. She said Washington is still trying to understand how future data centers will impact the state's commitment to zero emissions by 2050. I'm Eliza Billingham, reporting.
I'm Skylar Butenchin. Some leaders of Western Washington's faith communities are speaking out against the Trump administration's decision to partially fund the federal food benefit program known as SNAP. The program ran out of funding November 1st after the administration said it could not keep SNAP running due to the government shutdown. Bishop Frank Schuster is with the Archdiocese of Seattle and Catholic Community Services of Western Washington. He says last year they prepared over 700,000 meals for low-income people, many of whom rely on SNAP.
My friends, many worry that another Great Depression is on the horizon. I'm here to tell you, for many in our community, the next Great Depression is already here and about to get worse.
Schuster joined 24 other faith leaders and U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal to demand an immediate restoration of full funding to SNAP.
Oregon has not received federal funding for November SNAP benefits yet. That's after two judges ordered the Trump administration to keep the food aid program running. The federal government is directing all states to issue 50% of each household's normal monthly SNAP benefit amount for November due to limited federal funding. But Oregon officials say it's not a simple process. The state's Department of Human Services says it will take time for the agency to issue benefits accurately and fairly. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek says it could take weeks.
We have hundreds of thousands of children who are fed every day because their families have SNAP benefits. I don't even know where to start with how crazy this is and how unacceptable it is that the Trump administration is not choosing to do the right thing here.
Over 750,000 Oregonians rely on the program. In other Oregon news, a transportation funding bill that was a major priority for Kotek has now sat unsigned on the governor's desk for nearly a month. As Dirk Vanderhart reports, that's led to growing political pressure.
Kotek has until November 12th to sign the transportation bill, and every day she waits may strengthen the chances it survives. Republican lawmakers have vowed to collect enough signatures to put taxes within the bill on the November 2026 ballot. They have until December 30th, but they can't even begin until Kotek signs the bill. The governor has been vague about her plans, and she's getting bipartisan pushback. Republicans say she's trying to block Oregon voters from having a say by slow-walking her signature. And last month, two Democratic state senators voiced similar concerns, urging Kotek to sign the bill immediately. Opponents want voters to reject a slate of tax hikes, including a 6 cent per gallon increase to Oregon's gas tax. Recent polling suggests voters broadly oppose those taxes. I'm Dirk Vanderhart, reporting.
Speaking of vehicles, Oregonians have until next month to receive state rebates for new or used electric vehicles before funding runs out. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality announced this week it will pause its charge-ahead rebates on December 5th. Those rebates give qualified Oregonians up to $7,500 back when purchasing or leasing a new electric vehicle. This year, the program got a one-time financial boost from the federal government. DEQ's Erica Tim says that helped Oregonians buy more vehicles.
We expect this additional funding will help over 4,000 low and moderate income individuals access cleaner cars. So it's really, you know, more than doubling the impact this year in comparison to last year.
Tim says DEQ plans to reopen the program when it receives funding again next year.
You're listening to KMUN News. There is only one place in the United States that houses a Benedictine brewery. OPB's Lisa Wood takes us on a visit with the monks who still brew beer in the centuries-old monastic tradition.
Nestled in the trees on the hill above the town of Mount Angel, Oregon, sits Mount Angel Abbey. It was founded in the Willamette Valley in 1882 by Benedictine monks from Switzerland. After a disastrous fire in 1892, they rebuilt on the hilltop. The Abbey is an expansive complex that houses a monastery, a college, a library, a museum, a guesthouse and retreat center. And the reason I'm here, they are the only monastery in the United States with a brewery that still brews in the centuries-old monastic tradition.
Benedictine monks have a really long history in brewing. After the fall of the Roman Empire, with the collapse of Western civilization, there was very little structure left. And the monks became the brewers of the day. Charlemagne used monasteries to kind of put fabric to his empire. They needed beer for themselves because they couldn't drink the water. So for hundreds of years, until the Renaissance, monks were really the commercial brewers of the day.
That's Father Martin. He's the head brewer and general manager of the brewery and St. Michael Taproom. He produces about 230 barrels of beer a year. I asked him how he came to live at Mount Angel.
I was a software engineer for 10 years. I was involved in my local parish, and people started suggesting I be a priest, or they thought I was the priest, and I couldn't get the idea out of my head. The bishop sent me to Mount Angel Seminary. That was my first exposure to monastic life, but it took a few years of discerning to really make that shift. I came in 1995, so it's been 30 years now.
He wasn't a brewer when he came to Mount Angel, but an offer from a neighboring employee changed everything.
I was barely even a beer drinker. But I started brewing because one of our employees knocked on my office door and said she and her husband had some home brewing equipment they were not going to use anymore. Would I be interested in brewing beer? And I couldn't why are you asking me this question? I couldn't fathom. So I thanked her, but no, I have no interest in brewing beer. But that dumb idea stuck in my head. I wrestled with this thought for 1 month, and I went back to her and said, do you still have that? I fell in love with the process, so I just kept reading, and my engineering background certainly helped, and talking to brewers. And that's where we learned how collegial this industry is. People are very willing to share.
He tells me how the rule of Saint Benedict applies to work and craft and how the brewery fits into that.
You could say he permits the artisans of the monastery to pursue their arts, their crafts. But if it becomes a matter of pride, where the monk feels like he's bestowing something on the monastery, then he's no longer to practice that. This is really a spiritual life, not a business life, not an art life. The monk's number one pursuit is his own spiritual growth.
And what about when the monk is able to practice his craft without pride?
Say that you're heading in the right direction and you're producing things that people like, and are helping the monastery, then Saint Benedict lets it take those to market. What he wants to see is that monks price their goods a little bit less than everyone else. So you're not price gouging. There are people who think, well, monks made this, it's special, and they're willing to pay more for it. We're not 6th century Italy here. We want to work market price. That's the economic system we work in.
Father Martin brews beers that are true to the history of the monastic craft.
We gravitate towards Belgian styles. That's what people associate with monastic brewing because of the Belgian Trappists and their famous beers.
When it comes to sourcing ingredients, some come straight from the Abbey.
The hops are all local. In fact, some of them are grown on our land. The biggest ingredient in beer is, of course, water. It's like 95% water. That comes from our own well. I just have to filter it.
Other than the hum of patrons enjoying themselves, the tap room is quiet, and that's by design. There's no music, no TV, just a space for people to gather, socialize, and enjoy the fruits of Father Martin's work.
It's a special feeling when I can be back brewing a batch of beer and I hear the happy roar in the tap room. There's people here enjoying themselves, and I do hope that they're experiencing something unique in our Benedictine tap room.
But before anything can be served, Father Martin adds what he calls their secret ingredient. He blesses the tap room with a prayer and holy water every day.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the opening of the St. Michael tap room. We're going to do the blessing, so please join us.
And Father Martin has one hope for your experience with his beers.
What I really hope is that someone experiences the goodness of God in tasting a good beer.
And the message on Father Martin's beer bottles is pretty simple. Taste and believe. In Mount Angel, Oregon, I'm Lisa Wood.
You're listening to KMUN News. Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN News team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, news intern Sylvia Thorpe, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. If you have a news tip or a story idea, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. That's all from us today. You're listening to KMUN.